Hey all. So today I'm going to depart briefly from the series that I launched in the prior episode because I want to talk about one of my favorite books and authors, Sun Tzu. He wrote a book called The Art of War that I believe has so many embedded themes that relate directly to portfolio construction and how one should preserve their wealth and even prosper during hard times. I'll kick it off with a line from Sun Tzu here. He says, "Indirect tactics, efficiently applied, are inexhaustible." Again, indirect tactics, efficiently applied, are inexhaustible. It may not sound profound on its face, but to me, it blew my mind when I really grasped what Sun Tzu was going for here. What he's saying is, rather than using direct tactic, direct tactic, direct tactic, such as, buying stocks and holding them, that would be a direct tactic. The British in the Revolutionary War, just lining up in a line and firing, that to me is a direct tactic. There's a time and a place for tactics like that, but what Sun Tzu is arguing for is the efficient application of indirect tactics because A, it allows your, whether it's your soldiers or your portfolio, it allows things to sort of heal in the face of maybe high volatility or a declining market. Taking an indirect or roundabout approach or strategy, and I'll touch on what that means in practice, but mixing in indirect approaches with direct approaches, it can be tremendously efficacious and can really help you protect yourself from really severe drawdowns, which, as we know, is lethal to healthy compounding year over year. And as Einstein said, compounded interest is the eighth wonder of the world. So you really want to and Warren Buffett, another small name. He also said that the first rule of investing is don't lose money, and the second is to not forget the first. So the point is avoid these drawdowns by utilizing the sorts of indirect tactics that Sun Tzu advocates for. In war that would mean retreating, and in investing that would mean utilizing alternative investments. So, to cover some indirect tactics, to protect client wealth from severe and permanent impairment, one must consider making material allocations to assets and, as I said, strategies that have performed exceptionally well during secular market declines, and which have, at the very least, exhibited minimal bleed during more euphoric times, like. The decade that just sort of ended. I would argue we're no longer in a euphoric time, but many, many people exited these strategies that are designed to make money in rocky markets and to just sort of hang in there when things are really going nuts. And of course, that is the exact wrong time to exit those sorts of strategies. These indirect tactics, certainly few firms are willing to implement them because of the principal agent problem that they face. There's the typical advisor, and they've got an overloaded client book. What's the likelihood that they're going to really put the preservation of capital at the top of their to-do list? What they want to do is put you in a really simple portfolio that they can rebalance en masse. Make things very efficient, low cost. So they're buying products that you could go out and purchase on any platform for next to nothing. And they're not going to hold that many of those sort of strategies. So that's the typical advisor, and that's what drives them and motivates them because it allows them to pursue new business. And meanwhile, you're not. You have a day job, so you're not following the markets. You don't realize that it's ridiculous that you're paying an advisor 1% in order to, you know, purchase the same exact instruments that you could go ahead and purchase. You may not realize that, and that's totally understandable, again, because you have a day job, but it's bordering on criminal for advisors to act in this way, because they know if things fail and your life savings, your retirement evaporates, they can shrug their shoulders and say, hey, look, you know, we picked popular funds, and you know, the market, the vicissitudes in the market, you know, they can strike at inopportune times, and they can really strike in a lethal manner. So they just sort of blame it on the market as opposed to their lack of planning and their cowardice. So, you know, RIAs and brokers alike, they do face personal career risk if A, they trail the stock market, or that sort of hypothetical 60-40 portfolio by too much and for too long, or they may not have the built-in client trust that they need to maintain a relationship that would allow them to explain, hey, look, just stick with this strategy. You may not be beating your neighbor every month, but that doesn't matter. What matters is preserving your capital and growing your capital steadily over time. Compounding gains is what wins the race. A tortoise beats the hare every single time, because the hare gets way out in front, and then the stocks crater, and the hare breaks its leg, and meanwhile the tortoise is just, you know, steadily compounding on their diversified portfolio, and you know, that's definitely the latter is the way to go. So what you should look for in an advisor, by the way, is someone who has a very firm cap on his or her advisor to client ratio. Ask that question when you're talking to an advisor. So how many clients do you service, and how many people are on your team, and do you split that work up evenly? You want to get a sense for whether they're going to be open to your wishes. Because nobody, no matter how much advisors pretend, nobody knows you better than yourself. Nobody knows what you need in terms of you know, monetary wealth, and what's in the best interest of you and your family. So ask these questions. You know. Anyway, harvesting optimal risk-adjusted returns. Harvesting optimal risk-adjusted returns, rather. That's a very labor-intensive task, and it's another thing that requires extensive communication and very deep trust. So again, if an advisor has 200 clients, are they really harvesting your losses for tax purposes, and you know, communicating with you to keep you in the best possible strategy, even when you're, you know, lagging the market for an extended period of time? They are not going to be doing that, and that is why they give you a cookie cutter model, and they look like everybody else, because they don't want to lag behind everybody else, because that's how you lose clients. So let's get on to direct tactics, as Sun Tzu would call them. So as valuable as indirect tactics are, it's vital to have ample exposure to direct tactics. As the overquoted phrase from John Maynard Keynes goes, you know, markets can stay irrational longer than you can stay solvent. Another cliche that happens to be true, nothing exceeds like excess. So because it's a fool's game to try and time market tops, at least 40 to maybe 50% of one's investments should really prosper during secular bull markets. These would be your sort of equity market linked investments, whether that's real estate or equities in general. Your exposure to equities should be, you know, somewhere in that 40 to 50% range, so that you can really prosper when things are going bananas and everybody's making money. So my overall message here is that your investment portfolio should be, it should be an allocation that has an answer for any outcome. whether risk asset returns fall into the left side of the distribution, which is the negative side, whether they fall into the right tail, the positive side, or if they just fall somewhere in the middle. You should have instruments in your portfolio that are designed to prosper in all three of those potential environments. Global macro strategies, systematic CTAs, gold and commodity strategies, as well as long volatility investments are ideal instruments for generating returns and for preserving one's capital, by the way, during both left and right tail regimes. Assets associated with equity, credit, real estate, they prove their mettle during normal, quote unquote, normal economic periods or bull markets. Now, treasuries are a problematic asset. They were, when I first started considering the relationship between Sun Tzu's book and investing, and certainly they are problematic today, as inflation is on the doorstep of 8%, and the Federal Reserve seems content to let it ride. Fixed income in general is difficult to justify because of this economic backdrop, and yet it's still being used heavily in portfolios today for two reasons. The standard is do what everyone else is doing, and the other piece is people have recency bias, and they say, oh look, stocks and bonds have been they haven't been correlated for the past 10 years or so. Well, guess what? They're correlated now. Stocks and bonds are at present exhibiting positive correlation, which is very bad if you're expecting your bonds to be your protection when equity markets sell off. You don't want bonds to be moving in lockstep with equities. There's no life raft to jump onto. But the real problem is that the standalone returns offered by fixed income are nearly sure to fall short of this ridiculous annual inflation rate. Thus, investors are giving away future spending power when investing in bonds and incurring inflation risk in the process. A dollar today is worth far more than a dollar tomorrow, unless you buy bonds with that dollar. So, since the GFC, it's become abundantly clear that that long period of near zero yields, it didn't just cause portfolio bleed. They really rubbed salt in the wound by failing to diversify equity risk, they being bonds. And they continue to rub salt in the wound by failing to diversify equity risk. So for this reason, my recommendation to investors, I'll say, even though I just said my recommendation, this is not investment advice, talk to a professional. But I would say it is sensible to implement a bond proxy strategy. It's what I like to call it. A strategy like this will have two components. It's going to have a basket of high quality equities weighted to maximize diversification and minimize the variance of returns. And then you're going to couple that basket of equities with a leap put option on the S&P 500. And a leap put option is it's an options contract that gives you the right to sell the S&P 500 about a year or more out in the future at the strike price. The put option and the minimum variance weighting, they eliminate most of the systematic risk in holding the equities basket while allowing the investor to harvest a steady income stream. Rolling out of the money put options against the S&P is another way to go. Nassim Taleb advocates for this. But there's a simple way to solve this problem without having to go in and buy leap options and whatnot. Investors now can get exposure to these very prudent option strategies with ease, thanks to an extremely innovative new ETF shop called Simplify. To name one ticker, SPYC, that is that is an instrument that gives you 98% notional exposure to the S&P 500. So you're basically moving along with the S&P 500, but with the remaining 2% notional value, 1% goes towards purchasing a way out of the money call option, and one goes towards purchasing a way out of the money put option. So if things go bananas and volatility surges, this instrument will make money on those options. So there's some protection actually built into the ETF, and it's cheap, by the way. You're getting this added protection on the downside, and you're getting an added boost on the upside if volatility really rises and either a harsh bull market or a harsh bear market sets in. So that's all I have for today. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful evening, and take care.
She sits alone by a lamppost, trying to find the thoughts that escape her mind. She said, "There's the one I love the most. This life's not far behind. She never lets me in, only tells me where she's been. When she's had too much to drink. I say that I don't care, I just rub my hands through her dark hair and I pray to God you gotta help me fly away and just let her cry. Hear them tears fall down like rain, let her sing. If it eases all her pain, just let her go. Let her walk right out on me. And if the sun comes up tomorrow, let her be. Oh God, let her be.